Log Talk Radio.
Okay, let's see, everybody. Hey, this is Smiles Lewis and Mac White on PsyOp Radio, a special Wednesday night edition. And we're going to get started here in just a second, so stay tuned, and hopefully you'll hear something. All right, well, I think this thing is working. So, Mac, can you hear me?
I'm right here.
That music might be a little too loud for us, but there's nothing I can do about it in this particular case. But it should tone down in a few moments. But anyway, as long as you can hear me.
I hear you.
Good, I can hear you. This is a special Wednesday night edition of PsyOp Radio in the time slot normally reserved for the Blue Rose Report. And, of course, Blue Rose Report explores those strange realms exemplified by David Lynch's weird TV series Twin Peaks and his movie Fire Walk With Me, which is a prequel to that series. But PsyOp Radio delves into a lot of the same areas involving the use of psychological operations, techniques, psychological warfare against various enemies. So, Mac, it's good to be back on the air with you. It's been a while.
Yes, I've been away due to the family emergency. My father passed away a week ago, last Saturday. And so I've been out of town a lot dealing with that situation in Dallas. And have been back a few days just recovering from the ordeal, and a lot to do. I'll tell you, I've been very much out of the loop. I glance at a few headlines here and there. I barely have time to read the paper in the morning. I've been having to catch up with my work, and so. But what I am seeing is that things are pretty much in the situation they were before, which is bad. We're still at war. The president hasn't been impeached, and so on.
Yeah, no happy news like the indictment or impeachment of any of these so-called elected officials.
Mm-hmm.
Well, as we've said repeatedly, we're really sorry for your loss. I think it's obvious that your father raised a good man, and thus was a good man, and instilled in you a healthy skepticism of quote-unquote authority figures.
Yes, well, I appreciate your kind words there, and yes, my father was a newspaper man, and it was, he and I shared a lot of memories of the newspaper business. I grew up in the newspaper business. And he began editing the Mansfield News Mirror in Mansfield, Texas in 1960. I was just a kid. I would hang out there in the office and often accompany him on his rounds. And I guess our most memorable adventure was the day after John F. Kennedy was killed in Dallas, which was about a 30-minute or so drive from where we lived. The next day, I accompanied my father to Dallas, downtown Dallas, to the scene of the assassination less than 24 hours after it occurred. He wanted to take some pictures and just, look around. And, there wasn't anything else to do or to think about that day. And that experience made a deep impression on me. And he took a couple of photos of me standing in Dealey Plaza, one of which I'm facing the camera, and the other where my back is to the camera looking up at the school book depository, and he published those that picture in the next issue of his weekly paper on the front page. And I've still got that newspaper and still got the original photos, and in fact, it's posted on my website on an article called Dealey Plaza and the Dream, which recounts the whole day, or the whole weekend, really, and how it also, aside from just being an experience that everyone who was of a certain age, who was able to remember, does remember after all these years, and how in me it was the beginning of skepticism. and I guess the skepticism began with everybody, anybody with a working brain. The moment that Oswald was shot while in police custody, that should have and did raise a red flag of suspicion in many minds. In my case, it so happened that a colleague of my father's, who was the publisher of the weekly newspaper just down the road from us in Midlothian, Texas, that was the Midlothian Mirror, his name was Penn Jones, and he was among the very first Warren Commission critics, and my father knew him well, and I would talk to him occasionally, and I would hear through my father what Penn Jones was finding out and publishing in his newspaper there in Midlothian, later collected into four books that were printed in his print shop there called Forgive My Grief. And, that was the beginning of cynicism, the beginning of the awareness that there were some scary things that lurked beneath the surface that the mainstream media doesn't want to touch. But luckily there's an alternative press, and at that time the alternative press was weekly newspaper publishers who weren't part of a newspaper chain, and they weren't part of a major news service like the Associated Press or CBS. Nowadays we've got the internet, we've got talk radio. Not all talk radio is worthwhile, but a lot of it is, including this show right here.
Hope so.
Yeah, and so we're, for the time being, unless they're able to destroy web radio or the internet itself, we've got the most powerful alternative media that we've seen a while in this country. If we had had the internet in the days and the first few years following the Kennedy assassination, the lid would have been blown right off of that story much faster than it's taken, because you look at how much has been accomplished by the 9/11 truth movement just in a few years.
Yeah.
And most of it due to the alternative media, the internet and talk radio and documentaries by people like Alex Jones.
I know we've talked about how things like iPod activism have radically changed the approach that people can take now, because obviously part of the greatest psyop against the American people regarding JFK was the lack of showing of the Zapruder film,
mm-hmm.
and the visual evidence of the event of that day. And just like with, World Trade Center 7 footage from 9/11, you show that to somebody and explain to them that's not, that plane, that building was not hit by a plane, and there's contradictory explanations as to how or why it fell, and so symmetrically, and just the visual impact of that, effect of that is significant, and the same was true of the Zapruder film, which is why it was masked by the verbal retelling of a certain famous TV news person who was relaying what he said he saw to the American
mm-hmm.
public. That was Dan Rather, correct? That incorrectly described the action scene in the film footage on a radio program, I believe.
He was one of the few reporters who was allowed to view the Zapruder film in the first few days after the assassination, but the film itself could not be shown, they said, out of respect for the Kennedy family, and it wasn't seen at all. It took about a year for it to be published in Life magazine, just once, in the form of continuous pages or stills, like a comic strip. And they, at the key moment where Kennedy, his head flies forward, they reversed the pictures. So it, what a mistake, and what a place to for that to happen, of all places for them to get the sequence of the photos out of order.
Wow.
In order to misrepresent what happened. Well, but Dan Rather had previously misrepresented, either that or he had been asleep or on drugs when he watched it, because he said what he reported to the American people after viewing the Zapruder film was that Kennedy did not, when the shot, that last shot that we now know of as being the shot that came likely from the grassy knoll, which we can clearly see in the Zapruder film where he flies, back and to the left, and to the left.
The immortal mantra.
Yeah, Dan Rather reported it as being the opposite, that he was knocked forward by that final shot. And, the kindest thing you could say about that was that it was just really, really bad reporting. and later on, several years down the line, I'm not sure when, sometime in the, it might have been around the time of the 25th anniversary in the 80s, the 25th anniversary of the assassination, there was a, Dan Rather did, because by this time he's a big shot anchorman. I mean, his career was really given a boost by his reporting on the scene there in Dallas. And they were in this special that he hosted about the Kennedy assassination, the Zapruder film, which by this time had been available to the American public. It had first aired sometime in the 70s on a show that Geraldo Rivera was hosting.
Right, which Dick Gregory helped get the Zapruder film. And,
Dick Gregory, Robert Groden, they were on that show, and it was a memorable moment. I'll never forget that night, watching that for the first time, the Zapruder film. And, I thought, that settles it. There won't be any more talk of, Oswald acting alone and so forth. how naive could I be? They can argue with anything. It doesn't, what the physical evidence doesn't matter. Well, anyway, to get back what I was saying. So sometime in the 80s, Dan Rather is doing this special on the Kennedy assassination, and they show the Zapruder film. And they, show that moment where the Kennedy, is knocked backwards by what, looks like a shot from the front. And Dan Rather said something to the effect that it looked like Jackie pushed Jack Kennedy back. So
that's rich. that's about as good as the other conspiracy theory regarding the Zapruder film, besides the conspiracy of the film itself, about the driver turning around and shooting.
I've never been able to actually make that out.
And me neither.
Some people just swear that happens there.
You can clearly see the guy turns around. He's got a gun in his hand.
Yeah. Well, it's not so clear to me. It's one of those things like backward
clear,
masking.
Clear as mud.
When you play back some rock song backwards, you're supposed to hear all these satanic messages in it. And
smoke crack and Beelzebub's name.
Yeah, and I can't hear anything, you know.
Well,
I hear the satanic messages when they're played forward.
Oh. Especially when they're coming out of our leader's mouth.
Yeah, you know. I mean, why would they, you know, say it backwards?
Actually, that's funny. Are you familiar with reverse speech? It was really popular.
Yeah, I've never been convinced by that.
I just thought it was an amazing premise, even if...
It's interesting.
Funny. Yeah.
But, when I hear these things played back, it's like the inkblot test.
Yeah.
You know, it's...
Rorschach, yeah.
Yeah, Rorschach test, where, you know, well... people project onto these sounds things that they want to hear or think they hear, and then once it's been explained to you, then you hear it.
Yeah.
So I just don't find that very convincing.
Well, while we're on the subject of JFK, I just finished listening earlier today to Fenton Dunn's interview with a researcher named John Hankey, who has written or produced a couple of conspiracy videos. His website's jfkii.com, jfk2.com, and bushkilledjfk.com. And they were talking about, that we've talked about this idea that George Bush Sr. Was involved in the JFK assassination. Well, this guy's been researching the conspiracy behind the death of JFK Jr.
Hmm.
And, you know, that certainly, that's had my attention for a long time.
Yes.
But I hadn't really seen or heard much
mm-hmm.
beyond just some of the obvious things that gave me anywhere to go. And I got to say, I'd like to delve into this more, and I can't probably do their synopsize his research very well, but it's very intriguing. Of course, just the symmetry, the synchronistic symmetry of the idea of Bush Sr. killing JFK and Bush Jr. killing JFK Jr. Is intriguing, just for some sort of sick and twisted symmetry. But it's definitely worth investigating. The crux I haven't been able to get to yet is how they're connecting Bush Jr. and And they seem to invoke the Manchurian candidate mind control angle, but I'm guessing it from what if I understood what they were saying, they were implying JFK Jr. himself may have been the mind control victim who caused himself to crash.
Well, I don't know.
Yeah. Obviously.
You know, there's all kinds of ways to cause plane crashes, and that seems to be a popular method of assassination. Who was this fellow? Paul Wellstone?
Paul Wellstone, yeah.
And so many others. There's the belief that the Senator John Tower from
Ron
Texas
Brown, right?
Was that was a sabotage plane. And, what was this guy's? He was the Secretary of Commerce under Clinton.
Ron Brown? Yeah, I think that's his name. I can't remember.
Oh, there's been so many.
If Ron Brown's there's the other famous African-American TV show host who actually is pretty in the know about elites. But and I think his last name might be Brown as well, but I get them confused. But yeah, Ron Brown, the Clinton administrative guy who, again, Dick Gregory at the COPA conference in 2002 was holding up photographs from the crash site autopsy photos of Brown that were clearly indicating gunshot wounds to the back of the head.
Yeah, those were released sometime during Clinton's presidency by the Pentagon, or was leaked by somebody in the Pentagon, I think. Well, at any rate, there's strong evidence there that Brown was shot in the head before the plane crashed. I guess he wanted to make sure that if the plane crash didn't kill him. But, you know, I don't know what the sequence of events would be there, because somebody, you know, that shot him would have to parachute out.
You know, we talked we talked last time about the weird plane crash aspect to Howard Hunt's wife's death.
Yeah.
Allegedly on her way to pay off Nixon and cronies. Mm-hmm. There's so many other infamous plane crashes. I also, there was a infamous military plane crash that was carrying supposedly physical evidence from a weird UFO sighting known as the Maury Island incident.
Mm-hmm.
And the Maury Island incident actually has some strange connections through Clay Shaw and others to the Kennedy assassination. Ken Thomas of Steam Shovel Press, of course, has written about that. And just recently, in the last month or so, a archive hunter, somebody who's been researching for years this plane crash, he came across the remains of the plane. And this plane supposedly, again, had slag or some weird metal that was dumped by the alleged flying saucers. And their plane mysteriously went down on the way to transporting this this wreckage, supposedly, or this material. But it's a pretty strange case, and there's that weird overlap of, again, JFK, UFOs, and weird plane crashes.
Oh, there were questions raised about TWA 800.
Oh, yeah?
The Lockerbie crash, the Value Jet crash. There were, you know, there were all sorts of things happening during the Clinton administration that the TWA 800 really has attracted a lot of interest because so many witnesses saw what appeared to be a missile strike the plane as it was just off the coast of New York there, and so. From all that I recall reading about that, it's been a number of years now, the evidence seemed very compelling. What was never clarified was what was the motive for this. I heard all different kinds of motives, and I seem to recall, wasn't that the one that Pierre Salinger, who was a ABC news correspondent in Paris at that time.
He started digging into it and...
Yes.
And, yeah.
And he, here's your Kennedy connection, was the press secretary under JFK.
Oh, wow.
And maintained close connections with the Kennedy family for his entire life. He died several years ago, but he brought out all sorts of information about this and, of course, was immediately tarred and feathered as being a conspiracy wacko. So, and I can't remember now, so much has happened, so much blood has gone under the bridge, but I think he had some radar evidence that indicated a missile striking, and the airline was bound for Paris, so there was something going on there that involved the French, but who knows what. I think that a lot of the theories that were thrown out there were probably put out there maybe intentionally to confuse. And it would be very, very difficult to get at exactly what was going on. Yeah. And
first line of defense in psychological warfare.
That's right.
You know, muddy the waters.
Yeah, you know, the truth must be protected by a bodyguard of lies. Winston Churchill.
Yeah. Oh, man, I heard somebody misattribute that quote recently, and I was just like, no, wrong. They were, like, attributing it to, like, Rumsfeld or somebody. I'm like,
No,
it's Churchill. And there's an amazing book on psychological warfare called Bodyguard of Lies by Anthony Cave Brown. It was published in 78, 79, after, based on documents declassified in mid-70s. As usual, we haven't necessarily talked too much about what we wanted to talk about today, but let me just look at the thing that's on the top of my stack of possibilities. I wanted to bitch about this bitch. Michelle Malkin, neocon extraordinaire.
Yeah, what a horror.
I mean, this petite little... firecracker of a Asian woman who basically makes the rounds on all the quote-unquote right-wing talk shows that support the president and the Bush administration and the war on terror. I was pleased as punch earlier this week to see the somebody pointing out the link to her article published back in 2002 or 2003. I think it's okay. Yeah, the 6 month anniversary of September 11th. She published an article called "Just Wondering" on newsandopinion.com. Also, it was reproduced at JewishWorldReview.com. Interestingly enough, for those of you neocon Zionist watchers out there, March 8th, 2002, "Just Wondering." And she starts off by saying, "This 6 month anniversary of the September 11th terrorist attacks is upon us. Here are a half dozen unsolved mysteries still on my mind." And so everybody's pointing out, hey, wait a minute. So she was a seminal 9/11 truther.
Well, you know, evidently she was turned somehow.
Was it money? Was it coercion? Was it brainwashing? But she, among the things that she lists as unsolved mysteries is whether or not Flight 93 was shot down.
Hmm.
And she cites something that's often not talked about, which is that there was a report by the end of that day of there having been a shooting. I'm probably getting this plane number wrong, which plane it was. But
I'm sorry. Are you talking about the one in...
Yeah, 93, she was asking about the... she's asking about the Shanksville, Pennsylvania crash or shoot down, and talking about eyewitnesses that contradict... these people that say that something else happened. She says, among other things, one of the 9/11 calls from a passenger on the flight indicated that there was an explosion aboard the plane. The FBI immediately confiscated the tape. 8-mile-wide debris field seems to bolster claims of an onboard explosion. She comments that although both the cockpit voice recorder and flight data recorder were recovered, not a single scrap about what was on the black boxes has been officially released. The thing I was referring to about the gunshot murder on board is American Airlines Flight 11. I think that's the one where there was a report of an FAA report of someone, let's see, detailed the alleged shooting on Flight 11, passenger Daniel Lewin, by hijacker Satam al-Sukami. She mentioned this great one, the death of Catherine Smith. Smith was a Tennessee state license examiner who had been implicated last month in a phony ID scam involving a group of shady Middle Eastern men from New York City. Investigators say there are connections between the ring and the September 11th terrorists. One of them had a repair pass in his possession that gave him access to the lower levels of the World Trade Center basement. It was dated September 5. A day before Smith was to appear in court over the matter, she died in a bizarre and fiery crash inside a car registered to one of her Middle Eastern co-defendants. Smith was burned beyond recognition. Her arms and legs disintegrated in the flames. Yet her car was traveling barely over 20 miles per hour when it hit a utility pole, and damage to the vehicle was minimal. And the Highway Patrol concluded definitively that, quote, her death was not the result of the crash itself. Her death was by other means. And, of course, she ends it by saying, is this the vengeful work of Al-Qaeda killers still on the loose?
There and you then, go. There's always that spin there.
But she ends it with a few more, and that's, finally, why does Norma Netta still have a job? Good question. Who's responsible for the anthrax attacks? Good question.
Yes.
And the most nagging, unresolved question of them all, so where the hell is Osama bin Laden anyway?
Anybody remember him?
So if that doesn't reek of PSYOP and her change of heart, that seems to indicate that she actually was a real reporter at one point, you know, and now she's labeling everybody, conspiracy theorists for having questions like she did. And of course, most recently, her most recent tirade has been to demonize Ron Paul and say he should be eliminated from the presidential debates because he's appeared on radio shows like those of conspiracy nut Alex Jones.
Well, there you go. Well, you know, I've heard Alex say many a time that he says he knows from personal experience that they really do. They, meaning the spooks that work for the elites, they really do come to you and offer you big money and whatever to cause you to take a different line and to begin using their talking points and denouncing conspiracy theories. They really do that. And there are so many ways to cause someone to change their tune. You know, money is works really well, the lure of easy money. But also, you know, people can be coerced. And so you see it happen all the time. Someone will, for a time, be really reporting, really asking questions. And then, or it might be someone who has put out a number of really good articles. I'm thinking, I believe it's Alexander Cockburn.
Mm-hmm.
Who, wow, I mean, I have linked many times on my site to articles that he's written, very, very good, insightful, well-researched, but...
And then other things
that but when 9/11 comes up, suddenly it's those wacky conspiracy theorists.
Yeah.
They can't denounce it more intensely.
Well, and like one of the things that he did was the great reporting on the background of alleged Unabomber Ted Kaczynski,
mm-hmm.
and how Kaczynski was part of some university's MK Ultra type mind control experiments, and it's like, well, gee, that's kind of a telltale sign of government involvement and a possible, probable conspiracy.
And yet when it comes to 9/11, it's impossible for
yeah.
the government to do anything that evil. Oh, come on.
Well, you're listening to PSYOP Radio, and I'm your host, Miles Lewis, and our co-host, Mac White, is on the line, and we've been talking about, as usual, the weird parallels between 9/11, JFK, other four-letter words, other three-letter acronyms that imply so much, and that'll get you labeled just about every derogatory phrase or word you can imagine if you bring up these subjects. What else has been catching your attention? I know you said you've been out of the loop, but I'm sure you've had a moment or two to see a headline or three.
Hmm. Wow, suddenly my mind draws a complete blank. one issue that I focus a lot on these days is the issue of illegal immigration.
Yeah.
And so it caught my attention that there was this bipartisan compromise on an immigrant reform bill, and naturally it manages to displease everyone on all sides of the issue. So I don't know where we're going with that. And at the same time that is happening here in this country, in France, there are reforms being proposed with regard to illegal immigration. It's happening everywhere. And that's no coincidence. France, I don't believe, has ever really been satisfied with the European Union deal.
Yeah, most people aren't.
And most of them aren't. And so there's a parallel there, because this immigration that has really caused social disorder and threatens French society, as well as throughout Europe, really. France is not alone. France has always been very protective of its cultural identity and
right.
its language, and they don't mind saying it. They don't mind being called politically incorrect or xenophobic or racist or any of those slurs that get thrown at people that simply want to, maintain their
cultural identity,
sovereignty, and their cultural identity.
Yeah, sovereignty, most importantly.
Yeah, and it's happening there, and it's happening here, and it is part of a globalist agenda. There is, it can be readily demonstrated, but documentation that Bush has signed, I believe, not legally, treaties and what have you, that would lay the groundwork for that kind of a North American union, as I think what they want to call it here. And it's clearly not what most American citizens want. Immigration is great. I think that for a society to be healthy and to survive, you need some outside influence. It
Absolutely.
Needs outside blood, you know, to strengthen the bloodline and to make the and to strengthen the culture. But uncontrolled immigration and just the dissolution of our borders is not good. But if you promote that, then you find yourself being called something worse than a conspiracy theorist. You're called that too, but you'll find yourself being called xenophobic or whatever. And you mentioned Michelle Malkin. You know,
she wants to round up all the Muslims.
Yeah, you have all these commentators out there who are. You'd rather not have on your side, you know. it's like they're a bit. It's like they've been given the task, and as part of a psychological operation, to taint the argument against uncontrolled immigration.
Yeah.
As something fascist and sick and weird and dangerous, you know. That's what, that's one thing that I have been paying pretty close attention to.
Well, we know that, 9/11 truth is often the detractors try to paint it with the brush of anti-Semitism, and considering how easy it is to show the foreign influence of things like AIPAC and the Israel lobby, and the Turkish lobby, according to the whistleblower testimony of Sybil Edmonds, it's easy. Oh, well, they're talking about they're using that Z word. That's code for Jew. And in considering the fact of the neocons' unquestioning support of protecting Israel at all costs. That's not hard to draw those parallels, and especially with the information that's out there about the Mossad's at least shadowing of the alleged 9/11 hijackers. It's all very suggestive, but it's certainly just one small piece of the puzzle, and I think that so often is part of the tactics of ruling elites is to divide and conquer. And what's the easiest way to divide people? By their skin color or their ethnicity or their religious beliefs or what have you. Those are such easy ways to sow discontent between groups through psychological warfare and PSYOP campaigns. And I think
yes.
The immigration issue is very much a perfect example of that, where quote-unquote right and left, liberal, conservative, are being divided being given the appearance that their views on this are diametrically opposed, and couching things in terms of, human rights issues versus foreign policy issues and things of that nature. And I think that goes on even between genders, too. I was doing a Google News search for PSYOP and psychological warfare in the news, and, of course, Henry Mackow, the guy that created Scruples and who often talks about how men are being emasculated by these elites and their propaganda campaigns, he's got a new article called PSYOP, GM Castrates Men Using Feminist Ad, and I believe he's dissecting, pardon the pun, a recent series of Cadillac and car commercials that are obviously geared towards selling to women, and guess what? They portray men as, you know, impotent and idiots and little mice that scurry around, and you can see a lot of those trends in advertising. I mean, you know, I don't think every feminist on the planet would admit that, you know, that their fears and insecurities are being played upon by the fashion and cosmetics industry and the different food and Weight Watcher diet industries. And so I think, you know, psychological methods to sell, to quote the California-based Minutemen band from years ago, to finish that sentence, psychological methods to sell should be destroyed, is what they said and what I agree with. But that's, you know, that's psychological warfare. When people are using your, you know, psychological profile to sell to you, they're selling to you by way of manipulation of fear and the basis of human survival instincts.
Well, and with commercials, there appears to be a larger agenda than just selling the product, you can see it. And the way men are depicted in commercials is just terrible. the average white male, if you would believe the way they're depicted in most commercials, is a complete idiot, an overgrown baby who has to be led around and told what to do by his more competent wife. You see it all the time. They're just these big slobs, you know, with the baby fat.
Even in the sitcoms, too.
Yeah, and it's not just the commercials. It carries over into the entertainment. And you mentioned race division earlier. I've seen a lot of, you know, films lately that are supposed to be, oh, exploring sensitive social issues and the conflicts between cultures and what have you, and they appear to me to really be serving the purpose more of exacerbating these issues. I'm thinking of films like Babel and Crash. I tried to watch this film the other night called Bobby. It was ostensibly about the assassination of Robert Kennedy, and directed and written by Emilio Estevez, who comes from an otherwise good family. I mean, he's Charlie Sheen's brother. Charlie Sheen is one of us, man. He's a 9/11 truther. But this film doesn't get into any of the conspiracy angles of the story.
Right.
And it focuses on all these people whose lives all came together on the night that Bobby Kennedy was killed in the Ambassador Hotel in Los Angeles in 1968. They're all fictitious people.
What about the woman in the polka dot dress?
Yeah.
Huh?
Yeah, nothing. There's nothing true in there. I mean, actually, the story even completely falsifies the circumstances of the killing itself. All it does is just focus on all these characters as if it's a disaster movie. You know, you're introduced to all these stereotypical cardboard cutout characters whose lives are all going to eventually intersect when Bobby Kennedy is killed. And you just see a lot of racial politics that has more to do with today than it does with what was going on in 68. It's a lot of preachy dialogue. And one scene in particular, this is where I just turned the movie off, you know, and just popped the DVD out and, you know, and sent it back to Netflix, there's this conversation going on around the table of all these kitchen workers there at the Ambassador Hotel, and they're either black or they're Hispanic, and you got the Hispanic busboy there talking about how, you know, man, we're going to take back the Southwest, you know, the La Raza will rise again.
That's in there?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
And were they saying that in 68? I don't know.
I don't know
But
either.
Then Lawrence Fishburne, he's the wise black supervisor of this night shift, you know, what is sometimes called disparagingly by various persons as being sort of this, oh, it's a stereotype of a certain type of black character. He's the wise man, you know. I think the term is the magical Negro. You know, they have all the answers. And so he's saying, oh, you know, you've got too much anger. You need to put all your anger aside and work on, you know, making the white man give you your rights by, you know, in such a way that you'll make him think it was his idea. And it's all, you know, the white man this, the white man did that, the, you know, and it's really very divisive, because I look at that and it starts to really get on my nerves, you know, because I'm a white man and I'm not keeping anybody's rights from them. And then I feel at the same time that the psyops behind a scene like that is such that it serves to aggravate the other half of the audience, people of color, watching this and think, yeah, you know, the white man's out to get us, the white man this, the white man that. So, you know, where, you know, are we seeing any sensitive exploration of racial and cultural issues? We're not. We're just seeing this needless exercise of, you know, anger, and no real solutions offered anywhere in these films. In fact, in this film, Babel, it shows all these people through the course of the storyline who are of different cultures and races, and nobody ever, you know, comes to any kind of acceptance of the other. It just seems to convey this message of hopelessness, and I wonder if there isn't some kind of psyops at work there in films like this, that the intent seems to be to exacerbate our the tensions between different peoples.
I wouldn't doubt it. Well, we're fast approaching 8 o'clock, and I meant to say this earlier, but if anybody wants to call in, call listeners, you can call area code 347-996-3510. That's 347-996-3510. We'd love to hear from you, get some feedback, or if you have questions or comments or some news story that you think we should be talking about that got overlooked. I'm sure there's got to be some detractors out there. We got to have some skeptics who are just like, these guys are totally full of BS.
Yeah.
And you can hurl your invective, as Angela Keaton likes to say, to Miles at the website. You can, the email address, that's what I'm trying to say. You can hurl your invective at music@anomalyradio.com or web@elfis.net. And Mac, you've got your website, macwhite.com.
Yes, MACKWHITE.com.
And again, that number is area code 347-996-3510. I think that we've mentioned on the show before how, we talked tonight about the technological aspect of the new activism, the new conspiracy activists, and net radio, what you're listening to right now, is one of the ways that that's pushing the envelope in terms of, you know, getting the truth out to people, or giving them more versions of reality to compare, at least. In the last couple of days, the fight over net royalties for music played over the internet has been heating up again. The RIAA and the and Sound Exchange has been pushing for radical change in the amount of royalties paid by web radio broadcasters, big and small, hundreds of times what it used to be, that will put these broadcasters out of business, and maybe even this broadcaster that you're listening to here live on AnomalyRadio.com. shows like this could disappear, even though we're not about playing music necessarily. The streaming cost, the cost that our streaming providers charge us, is absolutely going to go up if these things make it through. So I would really recommend that folks who want to learn more about the issues on this go to live365.com/choice, where you can find out more about how this impacts broadcasters like ourselves, as well as yourself, the listener. So, and hopefully you'll be moved to contact your legislators and tell them what you think and how they should vote, because you do put them into office, hypothetically. But in the last couple of days, as we've been putting the heat on them, Sound Exchange has issued an announcement saying that they're willing to extend the old royalty rates until 2010 for small broadcasters, but that's a temporary thing, and it's just kind of like a little olive branch or bone. But SaveNetRadio.org, which is one of the websites that this community of broadcasters is coming together under, has issued their own press release saying, "Proposal would decimate internet radio industry. In response to Sound Exchange announcement today that it plans to offer those they designate as small webcasters an extension of current royalty rates through 2010, SaveNet Radio has released the following statement. The proposal made today would throw large webcasters under the bus and end any small webcasters' hopes of one day becoming big," says SaveNet Radio spokesperson Jake Ward. "Under government-set revenue caps, webcasters will invest less, innovate less, and promote less. Under this proposal, internet radio would become a lousy long-term business, unable to compete effectively against big broadcast and big satellite radio. Artists, webcasters, and listeners be damned." So you can find out more at SaveNetRadio.org and Live365.com/choice, and check out the issues related to that. And so what else is new out there in parapolitical PSYOP land? We've mentioned Rosie O'Donnell on almost every show recently because of her pushing the envelope on her show. And it looks, I saw an announcement today that it said that the Loose Change crew and maybe even Stephen Jones have been cut. They originally were going to be on the show talking about the science and the facts surrounding parapolitical truth related to 9/11, but that appears to not be going forward.
Yeah. Well, yeah, you know, there is a war against the alternative media. And you see it there where, hey, if the Loose Change filmmakers were putting out something that was other than the truth, then why, they would have them on the show. They would be so easy to destroy. But they can't attack the message. They can't attack the evidence. So they just silence the alternative media. And that's what's going on here with the attack on, well, really a war on web radio. What they can't control, they want to shut down, and we see it happening.
Yep. yeah, I don't know how this is going to affect Anomaly Radio. The new rates were supposed to go into effect back in March, and then there was a stay of execution until July, which some people suspect was, again, a delaying tactic as our forces were gathering steam. And now it looks like this may be, you know, without giving them the benefit of the doubt, that it sounds like that they're basically, you know, they don't want to look like the bad guys, you know, foreclosing on people's homes because of retroactive royalty fees, you know, which is pretty bad. I mean, pretty much where it's at. I mean, there are people who are going to owe thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of dollars for on royalties for music that they played last year.
That is terrible.
And you know, I don't know, retroactive taxes or fees in any case always seems a little unreasonable to me. But
yeah.
Especially in this case. So, well, Mac, hopefully sometime soon we'll get back on more of a normal schedule doing our Tuesday night stints. But actually, you know, as I've been looking over the schedule and as upgrades of the anomaly radio station loom, I think I'm gonna shake up the scheduling on anomaly radio network soon. So we'll probably shake out pretty much in the same slots that we've been at, because typically it's pretty convenient for us. But there's some new shows I want to add. I'm hoping maybe to add some shows and some live restreams of other shows, including the new upstart here in Austin, Round Rock area, the We the People Radio Network. They're streaming online, and we're happy to have them on the block. They're pumping out some good Patriot broadcasting.
Yeah, that's wonderful.
So you can find out more about them at WTPRN, that's .com, that's We the People Radio Network. And, of course, you're listening to the Anomaly Radio Network, and this has been a special Wednesday night edition of PSYOP Radio with Smiles Lewis and Mac White. Mac, you got any final comments?
Oh, I don't know. It's hard to sum all that up. you know, we're going to keep this web radio thing going here as long as we can. And who knows, maybe this is a fight that we can win. Maybe it's too late for this to be stopped.
And, I hope so.
But everybody's got to do what they can to, you know, inform themselves about what's going on and to contact their congresspersons. And really, you know, we have a shot here to win this battle.
Absolutely. Well, folks, thanks for tuning in. This again has been PSYOP Radio via anomalyradio.com. And this is the outro music for the Blue Rose Report. We hope you'll stay tuned at bluerosereport.com, PSYOPradio.com, MacWhite.com, and of course, anomalyradio.com. Just saying good night, and have a great evening, and we'll see you on the other side.
Good night.